So anyone here ever belong to an exclusive club? Think about it. You go back, maybe you have a membership at a country club or something like that, and it's an exclusive club. I remember when I was a kid, I had a friend who lived down the street from me in Dover, and he belonged to the Cochico Country Club. And because he was a member, we got to go in and use the swimming pool on a day like today. If I wasn't hanging out with someone that was a member, that was an exclusive member, I would be excluded from that. So he would invite me, and I remember going swimming there quite often with him. And then other days, riding my bicycle by his house, looking really hot, trying to get invited to the country club. But it didn't work all the time. Any other exclusive clubs that you can think of? I can remember when I was a kid, and maybe, I think guys, some of you are like this too, we had like a boys-only club. We built a clubhouse, nailed a sign on the outside, no girls allowed, right? We had the secret password to get in, the secret handshake, and the secret everything, you know, that we were doing. And I don't know who we were trying to impress, but we were all about that. We were exclusive, you know. Just past week, I read about an exclusive club in Montana. It's called the Yellowstone Club. Get this. It costs $250,000 to join. And there's only 250 members. Bill Gates is one of them. It's in Montana. It's got about 16,000 acres of skiing and golf and all of this stuff. And then the annual dues are $20,000 a year to just belong to the club. And you can only belong to the club if you live in that exclusive neighborhood. Houses go from between $5 million to $32 million in that club. How about that? Anybody here ready to move? Montana? You can upgrade your membership for $2 million and you become a worldwide membership. And you can go to any of their other clubs that they have around the world. And then this one. I just read this past week also that in a town that Sue and I, a city that Sue and I visited just recently in Charleston, South Carolina, this is so sad to me, that a guy, Dr. Melvin Brown, he was a well-known emergency doctor, and he applied to get into this club, the shooting club there. And they voted, the members vote, and they voted him out. And it was because of the color of his skin. They excluded him. And I thought, today? Really? 2019? But it happens all over the place. There's exclusive clubs all over the place that say, no girls allowed, no common people allowed, no poor people allowed, no Farmingtonians allowed, no black people allowed. There's all sorts of clubs like that all over the place. And we'll see in a moment that they've been around for a long, long time, for thousands of years. We're continuing our sermon series studying a letter that the Apostle Paul wrote to a church in Rome. And in this letter, he just addresses the people that are there. It's a bunch of new believers in Jesus. They don't have everything all together. They're trying to figure things out. And Paul, through the help of God inspiring them, is trying to help them to figure things out. And one of the things that we have discovered as we're unpacking this, we understand that the teachings and the principles that Paul was teaching this early church, they apply to us today. They apply to us here in Fernwood Park, too, because the words that Paul writes, they're universal. They're for all of us here. Paul starts out writing in chapter 10, which is where we find ourselves in chapters 9 and 10. Paul starts writing to the people in this church about an exclusive club. He doesn't call it an exclusive club, but this is what he was saying. We could call it like the good old boys club, or the righteous brigade, or the God squad, or whatever you want to title it. But he was writing to these people, and he was saying, listen, there's a bunch of people that think they have it all, but they don't. And he was encouraging these people that were outside, that were excluded from the club, that there was some good news to happen here. See, these people here, they believed in this club that if you really wanted to go to heaven, if you wanted to please God, if you wanted to be with God, then you had to follow all of these rules. You had to be born into a certain family. You had to dress a certain way. You had to eat certain things and not eat certain things. You had to do things to your body, actually, too. And this is the way that you got into the club. And only those people that followed each of these rules, each of these things, were able to join this club. They had to obey what we call today the law. This is a bunch of laws that were written out, and in order to join this club, you had to follow this. You had to work on being perfect. Now, how many of us could be in that club today? Come on. Anybody here perfect? Raise your hand. Deja, you're perfect. I'm sure Mom and Dad would say that, right? In fact, all of us would be considered out of this club. We really would be. We couldn't be part of this club because there weren't any unrighteous people allowed. No imperfect people allowed. And as we all know, that's who we are. It really is who we are. Now, there was a term that Paul used and the people of the day used and these people in the club used to talk about these people that were outside of the club. And it was this term. It was called Gentiles. You've heard that phrase before, Gentiles? Okay? And they were the people that were outside, excluded from the club, because they weren't born into it. They didn't follow the laws. They didn't even know the laws. They didn't eat a certain way. They didn't dress a certain way. And so therefore they were excluded from this club. And the people in the club let them know that they were out, that they had no business even contending with them. But here in this letter that Paul is writing to those people, those very people we're talking about, Paul gives them some pretty good news, and he gives us the good news too, and that is this. He's saying, listen, the clubhouse door, it's wide open. You're welcome in. There's no more things that can stop you from joining this club of knowing God, of going to heaven, of being righteous or being called righteous. There's nothing to stop you. All members, welcome. No matter what your background, no matter what you've done in the past. It doesn't matter if you follow the rules. It doesn't matter if you're not perfect. You can be in. And how? How did he say that? Jesus. That's how he said it. He said, you see, Jesus came along and he taught us this. He taught us that we are not made right by joining the club, by being born in a certain family, by following all the rules. We are made right by him, by what he does and what he does for us. And by doing that, he's saying, hey, come, come. And he is calling us to himself. As if one of the little kids that I was hanging out with up in the tree fort would start yelling out, hey, it's time for the club, come on. And we'd all just run there. Well, that's what Jesus is doing today. Listen to what Paul writes about. Romans chapter 9, verse 30 through 31 says this. So what does all this mean? Even though the Gentiles, those are the people outside the club, were not trying to follow God's standards, they were made right with God. How were they made right? We talked about that. It was Jesus. This means that they could be part of that club. And how did this happen? It continues on here and it says, it was by faith that this took place. See, they were made right with God, not by their own actions, but in faith in Jesus. It's a pretty simple thing to wrap our heads around. We can't do it, but he can. That's as simple as it is. All right? He continues on writing here in verse 31. But the people of Israel who tried so hard to get right with God by keeping the law, they never succeeded. Why not? Because they were trying to get right with God by keeping the law instead of trusting in him. So you know what Paul is saying there? He's saying those people that think they're in the club, they're really out. They're not in the club. And they think they are. They're following all the clubhouse rules. They're doing all the right things, and they are not in the club. But you guys, who didn't even know about this, didn't even know about the rules, well, I'm calling you to come. Time to enter in. Time to come. Then Paul goes on to reveal that there's no secret password. There's no handshake. You don't have to meet at a certain time. This is what he says in Romans 10, verse 9. If you declare with your mouth, Jesus is Lord, and believe in your heart, God raised him from the dead, then you will be saved. For it is with your heart that you believe and you're justified. We talk about that word justified numerous times over the past 6 weeks. Justified just means that you're made right with God, not by what we do, but by what he does, and he declares us right with him. So you're declared righteous and justified, and it is with your mouth that you profess your faith and that you're saved. As the scripture says, anyone who believes in him will never be put to shame, for there is no difference between the Jew and the Gentile, there's that word again, the same Lord of all, and richly he blesses all who call on him for, and get this, guys, everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. Did you hear that? Everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. No more exclusive club. No more having to be perfect. No more relying on ourselves. Everyone that calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. In the very last minutes of Jesus' life, he demonstrated this. He was hanging on a cross. These people put him up there, not really understanding who he was, that he was God. And on his left and on his right were two criminals. And these criminals were mocking Jesus. One of them turns to Jesus and he says, hey, if you're the Messiah, if you're who you say you are, save yourself. Come on, get down off of that cross. And while you're at it, save us too. But the other criminal on the other side, he started having a change of heart. And in his last moments of life, he turns to Jesus and he turns to the guy, first of all, his friend, and he says, what are you, are you nuts? He said, I'm paraphrasing, right? He says, you are mocking the Son of God here. And he turns to Jesus and he says, listen, will you forgive me? And on this day, I want to be with you wherever you're going. You see what he did there? He didn't say the words. He didn't follow the formula. But he believed in his heart that Jesus was who he said he was. And he confessed with his mouth. He said, I want to be with you. He confessed that he was Lord. What did Jesus do? Spit on the ground, say, no, you've lived your life as a criminal all the time. Get out of here. No. He turned to him and said, this day, this very day, you will be with me in heaven. In the last moments of his life, he believed in his heart, and he confessed with his mouth that he would be saved. I've had the opportunity, guys, to pray with people, to speak with people, as they're sitting in their easy chair in the last moments of their life, where they're laying in a hospital bed, or they're laying at their home bed. I've had numerous opportunities to do this, to be able to talk with these people about who Jesus is, to tell them exactly what I just told you. Some of these people are cognizant and they are understanding. And when you explain something so simple, say, listen, all that you did before, it doesn't amount to anything. It's what you're doing now. It's if you believe in Jesus, then you know where you're going to be going. I had something happen just this past week with a woman, one of our old saints that comes to the Farmington campus, and she's very near death. And as I was talking with her, she was sitting in her easy chair there. As I was talking to her, she's nodding her head, and I said, so you believe in Jesus as your Lord? Yes, yes. And so that you know where you're going to be when your time is done? Yes, yes. You know. And I believe in the next day or two or five, whatever it may be, I'm confident. Because of what God says here, the Bible says here, that she's going to be with God. Because she believed in her heart. And she confessed with her mouth. I remember another time I was speaking, I remember a guy that wasn't cognizant. He wasn't responding to me. But the family, they were all Christians, and this guy was not a Christian. And they wanted their dad to know Jesus so much, so they gave me a call to come over and to talk with him. And they said, we don't know what you can do. We don't know if you're able to just communicate with him. And he was writhing, and he was kind of, you know, he was just in a bad place. And so I kind of knelt down beside his bed, and the whole family was around. I remember some of these people, that just the look of hope, and just hoping something would happen. And I remember talking with this man, and he's just saying some of the same things I just said to you. Said, you know what, it doesn't matter what you've done in the past. It matters what you're doing right now. Because Jesus is opening the door for everybody us new life so that we could be with him. And then I said, I'm going to pray with you. And he couldn't respond with me. And I prayed at that moment. And I remember, as soon as we finished praying, he stopped writhing. He stopped. He just said, this peace came in. And everyone in the room, all these people in the room, were all crying. And I don't know. I just have to believe that he heard. Because they say that hearing is the last thing to go. That he heard. And he knew. And he believed in his heart. He got that good news, that last minute news. And he gave his life to Jesus and surrendered himself to him. Anyone who calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. Jesus talked about this in a parable. It's called the parable of the vineyard. And can you help me out, Steve? I'm gonna ask for a few volunteers. Come on. You have to help me or look, this is not going to work, okay? There was a guy who was an owner of the vineyard. Have a seat right there. All right. And this owner of the vineyard needed help in the vineyard. This is my vineyard, okay? And I needed help with all the work there. So he goes and he sees all these people that are not doing anything. They're not working. They're not doing any kind of job. And he says, hey, you want a job? I'll give you a fair day's wage. I'll give you $200 if you come. This is first thing in the morning. If you come and work in my vineyard, will you come? Will you come? All right, come on. You guys get $200. So start working on my vineyard, okay? Just start there. So he goes back home, and he's doing his thing. And 3 hours later, he comes back. And guess what? There's still a bunch of people sitting here doing nothing. And they're not doing anything. And he said, hey, you want a job? $200? Guys, I hope you don't really think I'm going to give you. Where's the work? Come on, are you working? You're getting paid for this. All right, so. And he grabs some other. Come on. And he says, go work. You get $200. And then he comes back another time. And he finds a bunch more people. And he gets them to work in the vineyard. Then he comes back another time. Gets them to work in the vineyard. And with 1 hour of sunlight left, he comes out. And he still sees people sitting around. I wonder what they've been doing all day. And he says, hey, do you want a job? Want a job? Okay, come on. Have a job. All right. Look at the job that they do, guys. Okay. So, the end of the day comes. Bell rings. Everybody comes and they stand in line to get paid. First guys come up. And I say, I'll take care of you in a second. Go back. Okay. The last guy comes up. Now he knows, he heard me say that I'm going to pay these guys $200. So he's figuring, well, I've worked an hour, so maybe I'll make $25 or something like that. But I hand out $200 to him. You just say thank you. All right. And the next guy that worked 3 hours comes and I hand him $200. The next guy that worked 6 hours, I hand him $200. So you know what these guys are thinking? These guys are thinking, man, if they made $200 working an hour, we're going to make $1,000. So they come, and I give them $200. All right.
Yeah, thank you.
And so, the deal is, it seems so unfair. Wait a minute. And then Jesus says, wait, the owner of the vineyard said, I'd give you $200 if you come. I told you, and I gave you what I wanted. And he said, can't I do with my own money what I want to do? Can't I show grace and mercy to the one that came and worked 1 hour? That's my prerogative. That's what happened to that man on the bed. Last hour. The 11th hour. You might think, that's not very fair. He didn't do anything all his life. Maybe he was a bad man all his life. But the very last hour, Jesus says, here, come into my vineyard. I want to pay you. I want to give you a good day's wage. And everyone is blessed. You might be saying, preacher, you know, I'm hearing you. But you're saying that everyone can be saved, but maybe like that guy that was laying in the bed, you don't know what I've done. You don't know how bad I've been. You don't know that bad stuff that I've been doing recently. You don't know about that. And how bad I the vineyard, or be part of the exclusive club, or be saved, as we're saying it. There's no way, because I'm not worthy. You know what, guys? That's the point. That is the point. You aren't worthy. No one's worthy. You think he was worthy of a day's worth pay? No. No one is worthy. That's why Jesus, in all his mercy, he comes and he gives it to us. And he shows us mercy when we should have condemnation. He shows us amazing grace, is what we call it, when we should have nothing. And he invites us. He's calling to us. And all you have to do to receive this is to believe it and to confess it. That's it. No hoops. You don't have to be born the right place. You don't have to do the right things. You don't have to dress the right way. Just believe. Confess with your mouth that Jesus is perfect and that you are not. Confess with your mouth that he is God and you are not. Confess with your mouth that it's your place to trust in his goodness and not to trust in your own goodness. And when you rely on him like that, you're saved. You're in the club. You're invited. We're going to take a moment here to pray. Now, I don't know who all you are and where your backgrounds are, or where your relationship is with Jesus right now. Maybe this is the first time you're hearing anything like this. I'm so happy that you're hearing it. And we're not going to freak you out or make you do anything that you don't want to do. But I would like to lead us, all of us, in this prayer. And you can say it, you can think it, you can try to believe it in your heart. But what I'm telling you guys, and the way I'm praying, it is the truth. It's the truth. And that's what so many people are searching all over for, is the truth. This is it. This is it. That Jesus wants you. He's pursuing you. And the only thing you have to do is say, here I am, I believe that, and I confess that you're Lord. Would you pray with me right here? Father, we come to you in moments like this. We're trying to make sense of some of these words that were just spoken. Some of us have a lot of guilt and a lot of shame, and we don't know what to do with that. But this guy here is saying, just give it over to you. So here I am. I'm doing that. I'm giving it over to you. This guy also talks about this freedom that can come with doing that. So I'm asking for that, Lord God. And I guess the way that I'm to receive this is to believe that you are God and that you are for me. We sang that this morning. You are for me. So nothing can be against me. And so, Father, I just give myself over to you. I want to sense that freedom. I want to have the chains broken. I want to have the chains of condemnation broken. I want to have the chains of addiction broken. I want my heart to be whole. I want my life to be made new, Lord, in you. So right now, I sense that